ओम शांति। मधुबन इज सो स्वीट एंड स्पेशल एंड व्हेन वी अराइव स्लोली स्लोली वी डाइव इनटू दिस ब्यूटीफुल वाइब्रेशंस एंड देन एवरीथिंग बिकम्स डिफरेंट एंड डिवाइन। So today you all and we all have a fortune to have Brother Charlie with us. Can I get indication that who is seeing or who are seeing Brother Charlie very first time? So when Brother Charlie will have idea? Oh, very few. So many have seen Brother Charlie and I'm sure heard Brother Charlie also. So Brother Charlie is one of the Baba's oldest jewels coming from Western world or outside India. And I was just thinking that I came in knowledge in 74-75 and almost same time Brother Charlie also received Baba's knowledge in London, but he is from Australia, so I think Daddy sent him back in 77 and then he started, you know, he became instrument for Baba's work there, and eventually slowly Baba used his all the qualities, skills, specialities in a one hand and his real love, his inner connection and faith from his heart, that Baba made him instrument to continue Baba's service, expansion of the service, sustenance of the service in Australia. And it was his fortune and Didi Nirmala's fortune that they were working together for Asia Pacific whole region. And not only that, administratively Brother Charlie helps in so many projects on a global level. I think starting from maybe from the, you know, late 70s or something like that. I'm not sure, he was there in 76 for the conference in Bombay, very first conference. I think I saw him there. We had a very first international conference, Divinize the Man spiritual conference in Bombay in end of 76 and beginning of 77. So that's the one part of his existence or a being. But another thing I always appreciate, that he reflects on Baba's knowledge and makes very beautiful connection and he personalizes it and customizes it in a very practical experiment level. So, and it makes things so powerful and grounded. So BK Life, I was wondering and talking somebody another day that now we have so many things available on internet, but still we come Madhuban. Why do we come Madhuban? To see what we are reading on internet or watching on videos of the internet and to feel it. So Brother Charlie is one of the examples that you can see and feel his exercises and experiments, and I think you will have a wonderful time with him. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. Good morning. And thank you for your lovely introduction, Sister Hansa. In fact, in her introduction, she was saying that I took Gyan in London, and she said, Daddy sent me to Australia. My family, I'm from Australia, my family was there. But in fact, in 1977, I did the course in 75. In 1977, I decided to go home and just see my family. And I went to take leave from Daddy Janki in London. And she said to me, go to Australia, and as soon as you have any Maya, hop on the next plane and come straight back again. That was her introduction, or her advice for me. And then when I went to Madhuban, Daddy Prakashmani was here, and Moini Ben, Sister Moini, who lives in Daddy's cottage. And when I was meeting Daddyji, she said to me, what are your plans? And I said that, I'm going to Australia to see my family. And Moini Ben said, you should open a center. She pointed the finger and said, you should open a center. I didn't say anything. And then as I was walking around Madhuban in the next few days, everyone started to say, oh, I hear you're going to Australia to open a center. Oh, am I? But anyway, I went there and we did start some service in Melbourne. But it's lovely to be here, and it's lovely at this time because all Baba's children are coming from all corners. And in just 5 days, Baba will be coming for the first meeting of the season. And I think many of us are wondering, what will Baba talk about? And I wonder whether Baba will ask us about the homework. Have you remained constantly content? Who has, what did Baba say, to remain cheerful no matter what? Who's been cheerful no matter what? Oh, there's a few. Well done. But I was remembering that in the last Muli of the season, Baba described the greatest treasure. Do you remember what the greatest treasure was? The confluence age was the greatest treasure. And I remember when I came in Gyan, there was Didi Manmohini. The leaders of the Yajna at that time were Daddy Prakashmani, who many of you have seen, but Didi Manmohini, who left the body in 1983. And Didi was an extraordinary student. She never read the Muli. Daddyji always did, but Didiji would always sit with her notebook and make notes. And whenever she was asked what was her favorite point of knowledge, she would say the confluence age. And if you asked her why, she would always say, because it brought the whole of Baba's knowledge up. That God has come, it's the time to make effort, you know, it's the end of the old world, the beginning of the new world. Like all of Baba's knowledge comes into focus. And many times I reflect, you know, how much effort have I made for this life? All of us sitting in this room, how much effort have I made to be here? If you had a videotape of the Copper Age and the Iron Age, if you could watch yourself over the last 63 births, I think it would be a fascinating watch. Do you think so? I think in every life, this passion would enter, this yearning to find God, to find truth, to rediscover true love. I think we're old souls. And this yearning would override everything, our roles, our families, because as old souls, we're never really satisfied until we fully connect with my truth. I think we've made so much effort. But now I found Baba. Now I belong to Baba. Am I happy? Am I happy? Am I using my time in a worthwhile way? Many times I wonder, you know, do I remain in the confluence age, or do sometimes I take a holiday in the Iron Age? In the sense, mentally, as soon as my mind touches thoughts of the old world, it's like in that moment I step away from this extraordinary time. Because I often believe that the main maya of the family at this time is ordinariness. You know, that thing of just becoming ordinary. It's like after some time, the wonder of this time, the wonder of what we are doing here is forgotten and ordinariness kicks in. And I think one of the extraordinary things of human nature is that in time we become familiar. You know, in a relationship, after sometimes when you meet somebody, it's so special. You feel so much love and connection. But in time, as time goes on, we take them for granted. We become familiar and the relationship just becomes quite ordinary. Strange as it may seem, even with Baba sometimes and Baba's truth, eternal truth, we can become familiar with that eternal truth. And I often feel that wisdom, real wisdom, is to sustain the value of things in my mind. And wisdom is to sustain the wonder that this is the only time in eternity, this confluence period, the only time in eternity that I can know God, that I can explore total truth, that I can realize myself, that I can experience bliss. And often I ask the question, how am I really using this life? Am I using my time in a worthwhile way? And another question I sometimes ask myself, because it depends on your outlook, am I fortune focused or am I misfortune focused? Do I look at the big picture that I found Baba, I'm home to where I belong? Or do I get caught up in all the petty issues of life, the little conflicts, the little comments, the problems, the difficulties, the challenges? And when they dominate my thinking, I begin to forget the wonder of this life. Being in the confluence age, it's the most exclusive club of the whole cycle. How many people belong to this club, this exclusive club, to know that this is the confluence age? It's very, very few. And I remember in my early days in London, I did the course and I had a job in downtown London. And one day, I was walking in the back streets of London and there was some graffiti on the wall. And it said, someone had written in a very rough way on a big wall, oh where are the angels? Oh where are the angels? And I remember just standing looking at this and I thought, wow, that's us. And then I began to think, wow, that's me. And I really felt, you know, the hearts of humanity are calling for us, the angels, to step up and like play our part in this very cold and unfriendly and unhappy world. You know, and I often really think about this because to me, this is the most magical time of the cycle. But I think we could say it's the most magical time of the magical time because we're going to observe the glorification of God in this world. We're going to observe this extraordinary change in this world. It's such an extraordinary time. I believe the best years of the cycle are still to come. The best years, because we're going to watch the wonder that has been written about the whole cycle. You know, God's glorification in this world. And we're a part of this amazing family of angels. It's wonderful just to think in this big way. Because on the one hand, when you look at the world today, there's so much stress and anxiety, so much tension. And there's a whole lot of reasons we all know. But one part of knowledge I love is that the whole part is in the memory track of the human soul. My whole part, my past, my present, and my future. And I believe that the human souls were all a bit psychic, attuning in that the near future is one of absolute chaos and upheaval. And so that's why sometimes people feel so lost and so depressed and so, you know, anxious, because subtly people are picking up that the world is about to fall into this incredible chaos. But at the same time, people feel this is the time of God and His angels. And so what is in the memory track of we Brahmins? It's like we have the future in our memory track too. And our future is to step up and play our part of last cycle. You know? And I think this is an amazing thing that often, you know, it's like I think Baba is invoking us, time is invoking us, drama is invoking us, the souls of the world are invoking us. Everyone wants, but we're saying, oh no, no, Baba, I'm not ready, I'm not ready. But it's like that part is there invoking me in my memory track to step out of my limitations, to step out of the vision on myself which says I'm not good enough, I can't do it, to step truly into the confluence age of total self-respect to play the part of last cycle. Because sometimes I think the greatest challenge is to accept my own greatness. You know, to have the self-respect, I'm Baba's child, it is my part to become an angel and play this role. And sometimes I think some of us think, oh no, it's just the daddies and the seniors will play that part. But no, you know, we're all going to play that part. And it's like Baba is really preparing us to do that. And I think so much of this life is really to step out of the limited vision I have on myself. The confluence age is the time where I let go the vision I've collected through the second half of the cycle. I'm not good, I can't do this, I haven't done this, I won't be able to do that. You know, I've boxed myself into these limitations. And that's like where I sit in my world of limitations. But actually, Baba wants me to step into his unlimited vision. And so many times I share my first meeting with Baba. When I came here in 1975, I was 2.5 months in Gyan. And in those days, Baba would come every second night or so. And my first meeting was in the history hall with about 50 Brahmins, maybe 70 Brahmins. It was such a small little organization. And Baba spoke the Muli, and Baba actually said in that Muli, the double foreigner season was three. There were three of us. Times have changed, haven't they? And Baba said that so many foreigners will come. But at the end of the Muli in those days, they had personal meetings. And I sat in front of Baba, and Baba gave me drishti. Baba would always meet with drishti. And I had the experience that Baba's drishti went deep into the soul and scanned my memory track, you know? It's like, and his drishti fell on a part of me that had been forgotten. Sort of like the Sleeping Beauty story, you know? It's been sleeping. And it's almost like Baba's drishti fell on that and introduced me to my real self, my true self, my original self, my elevated self, my self-respect. And I can honestly say from that day something changed in me. There was something that shifted. And it's almost like I stepped out of my vision of limitation, of what I'm not, into God's vision. And to me, this is the whole story of the confluence age, is having the courage to step outside this very limited view of who I am. You know, that I'm not so educated, I haven't done this, I can't speak, I can't teach, I can't do anything. And actually step into God's vision as a world benefactor. Baba sees me, in such a way, and the duty of a knowledgeful soul is to do that. If Baba says, child, you're a world benefactor, child, you're an angel, and I say, oh, no, Baba, no, I'm not, you don't know what I'm like. Actually, Baba knows what I'm like. It's me who doesn't know what I'm like. And I think this is the great journey of the confluence age, to step into my elevated path, have the courage. It's invoking me at the moment. But I think that the first real step of the confluence age is self-realization. And I think that, you know, is there a day that Baba doesn't encourage us to go deeper and deeper into this first lesson? We are recreating a new world based on soul consciousness. The culture of the golden age is soul consciousness. We are the people recreating the original culture with our spiritual effort. The main service of the future is not really giving talks, but becoming soul conscious. Baba needs enough of us to recreate that culture in the world. And I often think, how far have I come? How far have I become soul conscious? And a few years ago, Baba said something which I reflect on a lot because it put a lot in perspective. Baba said, children, let go the eye of arrogance and the eye of disheartenment and emerge the eye of soul consciousness. Let go the eye of arrogance and the eye of disheartenment and emerge the eye of soul consciousness. And I began to think, if we have these three eyes inside of me, the eye of arrogance, the eye of disheartenment, and the eye of soul consciousness, which is more powerful? Which is more dominant? After all these years as Baba's child, am I really soul conscious, or am I still constantly fluctuating under the influence of my ego and my lack of self-respect? And I often think about this because it helps me understand where I am and whether I've really adopted this confluence age awareness of traveling back into this soul conscious state. Because the eye of arrogance or the eye of superiority has a whole internal structure. The way it thinks, the way it feels, the way it behaves. I know when I'm under the influence of the old me. This eye thinks, I am better, I know more, I am right. This eye always compares with others. In a split second, this eye will be comparing myself with others, positioning. But it's when it comes into my feelings, when this eye is ruling, the eye of arrogance, when it comes into my feelings, that's when I feel disrespected, hurt, insulted, not valued, sensitive. Anyone here sensitive? We only have a few honest people in here. I mean, we all get sensitive, right? Sensitivity is a form of ego. And what I find is that when I begin to see these feelings dominating my thinking, it's like I'm under the old self. The old self is ruling in my inner system. And when it comes into my behavior, I begin to think, I'm fine, you're the problem. In a sense, so far away from truth, so disconnected from truth. And so that first personality that Baba talked about, the eye of arrogance, still lives quite strongly. The second personality, and these are the personalities we're trying to work through and change, is the eye of disheartenment. Baba used that language. And actually, Daddy Jenki, when I first arrived, for the whole week, she was talking and saying that really she never gets disheartened, like losing hope, feeling hopeless about myself, losing self-respect. Because when this I is ruling, and this is the powerful I we all have to deal with in the confluence age, when this I is ruling, I begin to think, others are better, others know more. Others don't love me, others don't respect me, others don't value me, you know, others don't support me. And when it comes into my feelings, I sometimes feel hopeless, inadequate, you know, inferior, unworthy, impure. This is such a powerful I. And I find that when I look at the cycle, what have we been doing for 2,500 years? Often I think that we are the souls who have gone into the temples, the churches, the mosques, the synagogues, whatever they may be. What did we do? Oh God, or oh deity, you're so great, you're so pure, you're so elevated, and I'm so impure, and I'm so weak, you know? It's almost like every day we reinforce this sense of inferiority in front of God. I feel this habitual pattern is the reason we sometimes feel so distant from Baba. This lack of self-value is the big issue for we Baba's children. And it's my duty as Baba's child. I have to deal with lack of self-respect, with disheartenment. It's actually, I often feel that if I really recognize Baba, I will step back into my self-respect. If I haven't stepped back into my self-respect, there's a lack of recognition of who is teaching me. Because it's the result of the study, is to step back into my value, to play my part. And often what happens is we fluctuate between the eye of superiority and the eye of inferiority, the eye of arrogance and the eye of lack of self-respect. And then Baba comes along and says, children, re-emerge the eye of soul consciousness. And to me, this is the lifelong learning. And this is the study. And I often think, we've heard it so many times. We hear it constantly. And Baba reminds us every day, but how deep have I gone into the first lesson? Because this is our study. To me, spiritual study is taking one idea and going deeper, deeper, deeper. It's like I have to do my own research. Because when I start to think I'm the soul, it's like I come back to a place in myself where I really belong. Where I take the pressure off myself to impress others, you know, to be something, to look good. I just feel comfortable who I am. And I've been thinking, you know, it's so long that we've been identifying to being this. And yet recently in Sydney, I met a man who's a friend of the centre, and he's a filmmaker. And he makes films on reincarnation. He's made a lot of films on reincarnation. And he's a scientist, actually. And he was just talking to me, and he said, you know, 99% of matter is space. And if you look at the atom, and this body is built of billions of little building blocks of atoms, he said 99% of the atom is space. There's a little nucleus, and the rest is space, and there's the electron. And in a way, he was just saying this body is basically space. It's like a hologram. You know, it feels so solid, and yet it's just a temporary vehicle that the incorporeal expresses through the corporeal. It's just a very, very temporary thing. And yet, we have taken on board this identity so deeply. And that's why I think that this first step in the confluence age, I know I'm a soul, I believe I'm a soul, but do I experience I'm a soul, really? or is it faith that is driving me? I often feel the first step is to know, the second step is to believe, the next 998 steps are educating myself how to experience, how to transform a belief, an idea, into a feeling and an experience. I remember once Brother Ken and I were sharing with each other, and we began to think that when Baba says, children, churn the knowledge, we actually began to replace that word with experience. Like Baba saying, children, experience the knowledge. What is meditation? Converting the theory into an experience. And I was only just mentioning the other day, we're having the NC retreat, but in the mid-1980s, Baba asked the foreigners to do the course again. I don't know whether anyone was there, but anyone was there. It was 1985. I'd been a BK for 10 years. We came to Madhavan. We sat in Om Shanti Bhavan, and Baba said, okay, children, do the course again. And you know what he said? He said, the double foreigners, you know the knowledge, you believe the knowledge, you teach the knowledge, but you don't experience the knowledge. And to me, this is the quest of the confluence. Otherwise, we're just like a devotee for the last 63 births. We believe it and we teach it. We're not tasting it and we're not feeling it. And Baba said something which I've never forgotten, and that is, Baba said, children, every point of spiritual knowledge has an associated experience. In other words, sometimes once we know something and we believe it, we think, yes, I know it. But that's the beginning with Baba. We've got to transform the knowledge of the soul into this deep experience of peace. Transform the knowledge of God into this deep experience of love, loving, belonging, feeling close. We've got to educate myself how to experience. And I think that, you know, for me this has always been an important thing. Because when I began to practice soul consciousness, and I think many of Baba's children, we think, okay, yes, Baba, I've really got to go deeper into this soul conscious practice. Learn the art of detachment from my body. In a deep sense. So I practice, 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 and I don't really feel I'm getting so far. I think many of Baba's children do. For the amount of time I invest in effort, there's not that much result. Why? Because I think we still identify with the eye of superiority and the eye of inferiority, you know? We still sort of identify with them. And to really go and identify deeply with this first lesson of who am I? I am the soul. This is the lifelong learning which we really have to do. And I think that over the years, and one of my passions, as a lot of you know, is to do experiments in the laboratory of your mind. What is meditation? You know, sometimes some of Baba's children feel quite bored in meditation. They're waiting for the music to play. Because we just use the same thinking. You know, if you use the same thinking, you're not going to get any new experience. And then when you feel bored in meditation, you lose the confidence you can meditate well. And that's when we start to look for service, for newness. And that's a little bit the culture in the Brahman world today. Service is our outlet of our expression, rather than maybe deeply exploring those spiritual feelings, you know, in my mind. And I think that I've done a lot of experiments, and I love to do them over months to explore the depth of an idea. I've done experiments about the form of the soul, you know, all these sorts of things. But more recently, I've done it around the nature of the soul to be incorporeal. I really love that idea, to be non-physical. Because when I start to taste the feeling of being separate from the consciousness of my body, I find that it's a natural way to be uninfluenced. You know, a lot of us feel, oh, everything influences me. A comment from somebody, a situation, it just drives my thinking. I come totally under the influence. And as soon as I get over that, something else upsets me and influences me. It's like I'm so delicate. Yet I found the more I became incorporeal, the less the corporeal world could influence me. It's like the more you step into the feeling of being a non-physical being. And what did Baba say when he left the body? I often feel he summarized 32 years of efforts in those three words: incorporeal, viceless, and egoless. The first word. Even I remember Didi Manmohini. I asked her, Didi, of all the efforts to make in this life, what is the most important? And straight away she said to be incorporeal, just like that. And really my experience is the more you keep asking yourself, how does it feel, how does it feel? You taste the reality of the eternal self to be non-physical, but you're living in a physical world. You become naturally detached from everything. You're there, you're close, you're communicating, but you're not absorbing, you're not being influenced, you're not being disturbed. And that's really, I think, what all of us want. We want to be in this world, but not constantly being influenced, affected, upset, disturbed. Because, you know, that means we just fluctuate and we go up and down. And I feel that the confluence age is this extraordinary time to know my true self. It's the only time I can experience who I am. I am self-conscious in the golden age, but I'm not consciously self-conscious. That makes sense. Now I'm consciously self-aware. The only time in eternity I can know who I really am. The second thing of the confluence age, I feel, is the healing of relationships. My experiences with Baba's children, what dominates my thinking, probably more than anything, is my relationships with others, my interactions with others. I often mention that Jagdish Bhai, who I think died about 12 years ago, and he was an extraordinary intellect, he said something which I love, and he said, the cycle is a love story. We lived in a world of love. The Golden Age was a world of divine love, absolute love. It's recorded in my memory track, this perfection of love. It's why we are so idealistic about what relationships should be like. But he said that once we come to the copper age, it's not that we stop loving. We just begin to love the wrong things. And he was just saying that when we love material things, it becomes greed. When we love the bodies of others, it becomes lust and attachment. When I love my own body, it becomes ego. All the vices are is perverted forms of love. And when Baba comes, Baba re-educates us. What is true love? What is accurate love? And I remember once Baba said that true love is loving that which always exists. That has had such an influence on me. The biggest deception in life is to love anything temporary. Anything. If you love a role, if you love a possession, if you love a person, if you love anything temporary, at some point it will cause you sorrow. Baba's re-teaching us to love ourselves as eternal souls, love Baba as eternal soul, and each other as eternal souls. And if that's the foundation, it's like I'm relearning what true love is really about. And many times I think that how can I really see what a spiritual person I am? What's the sign of someone who's really spiritual? Is it because, you know, they wear nice white clothes and they've got a nice badge or something like that? I feel the main way is my relationships, how I treat others. So much of my spirituality manifests in my relationships with others. And the image I have in my mind is that by the end of the cycle, I have the whole spectrum of sanskaras in my memory track. I have the capacity to be absolutely loving, you know, absolutely kind and benevolent and sweet and cooperative. But at the other end of the spectrum, I have the capacity to be so easily hurt, so easily upset, so easily disturbed, you know? And all relationships do is trigger what is already in me. This stuff is sitting in my memory track. You come in front of me, your behavior, your face, your words trigger feelings. And the one with knowledge looks at the self. The one without knowledge will look at you. And I'm amazed how we all know this, we teach it, and yet still we project, we blame. It's such a deep habitual pattern to always project it onto you, and yet all you are doing, you're a messenger revealing what's inside of me. And if I'm really spiritual, it's like, thank you, you're helping me understand what sanskaras are still left inside of me. Can I be that knowledgeful? And often I think, you know, the role of the Brahman family is to make me pure. Because if I can live in the heart of the Brahman family and maintain sweet and loving relationships, I know my sanskaras have changed. But along the way, differences will emerge. Conflicts. Things will happen. Quite frankly, it's natural. I don't think that's the problem. The problem is how I respond. Do I respond with the old story? You've done this, you're this, why, you know, and project, or do I take it as a learning? You've helped me understand who I am. This is such a deep thing. Because I think in this whole thing of this eye of ego of superiority and inferiority, it's revealed in relationships. And it's relationships that trigger all this stuff inside of me. And in a way, you know, sometimes in this Brahman family, sometimes we're put ahead, sometimes we're given opportunities, sometimes we're praised, but sometimes we're not praised, we're not given opportunities. It's very healthy. It's very healthy because we're ultimately here to deal with my ego and become genuinely humble. Soul consciousness is to be genuinely humble. And I often observed myself reacting to people internally. And we all know sometimes, you know, we will say things, but mostly the reactions are internal. Because my reactions to people are the best indicator of the quality of my spirituality and purity. My reactions indicate my stage, really. If, you know, people do things and I, you know, I react, you know, very angrily, or I hold grudges, or I ignore people, you know, when people do things and they upset me, and I just, like, cut them out, you know, give them the silent treatment. these sorts of behaviors all reject somebody. I remember Daddy Jenke saying the most violent thing we can do is to reject another human being. If these behaviors are still in me, I hold grudges, I sort of give people the silent treatment, etc., then it's indicating still there's tamopradan sanskars. I might not express it, but if I'm reacting in this way, or tamo sanskaras, I would say, you know, things like speaking a lot about others, getting easily upset, a little thing happens, and I get easily disturbed. You know, things like that. Raja sanskaras are preferences. I like you, but I don't like you. When do I know I'm starting, my sanskaras are getting clean? When it becomes natural to see virtue, natural to let go, natural to have good wishes for others. Because in a sense, I'm dealing with the eye of superiority and the eye of inferiority. And the more the soul is so conscious, there's just not reaction. I won't react to these things. And sometimes I think satopradan responses are even when people have no love for me, that I'm able to offer loving feelings to them. That's a very high state. It's a very high state, as we know. And yet, why are we here? We're here to really clean. The confluence age is cleaning my subconscious. Relationships give me the indicator of how far I'm really progressing. And Baba's given us this amazing family to see really what is the quality of my sanskaras. And it's living in the heart of the Brahman family that's really going to make me pure. And sometimes we think, okay, Baba, this is true. I'm going to make effort. And so we try and try and try to have good wishes for others. But they just don't work. And we say, Baba, I've been trying, but it hasn't changed anything. And sometimes they think, you know, we feel something like, you know, well, you're a really difficult soul, but I'm going to have good wishes for you, you know? You're a real problem, but don't worry, I'm going to have good feelings for you. It's like they're very patronizing, you know? Patronizing sort of. They don't work. They don't work. They've got to be really genuine. And it's why, to me, this whole thing of good wishes, pure feelings, elevated attitude is so essential in this confluence period of transformation. Because what I've observed in myself, I often sort of have the image that in my sanskaras, I've got a pot of pure sanskaras and a pot of impure sanskaras. You know, my original ones and my conditioned ones. Each time you behave badly, you do something, and I react, I'm reinforcing, I'm giving strength to my impurity. I'm strengthening my body consciousness. I'm giving life to my ego. Do you understand what I mean? Each time something happens, I get hurt, I get upset, I get disturbed, I'm keeping my impurity alive inside. This is such a deep thing. And what Baba's saying, that if I want to become pure, rather than reacting from the old story, people do this, people do that, and they will continue to do it till the end of the cycle. But I react with good feelings. I react with good wishes. What does that do? It strengthens my purity. When I understand that each time I feel disturbed, I feel hurt, I feel upset, I am keeping myself stuck in a place which I can't change. I remain stuck in this place of body consciousness. But each time I react with love and respect and goodwill, I'm actually freeing myself from my old story and stepping back into my original state. And I think that you know, the confluence period first is this amazing journey of self-realization. But on this journey, I'm with this family. We are the souls on the family path. So much of our transformation is connected to my relationships with others. And the more I become pure, the more my relationships improve. And one of the things which has become so important for me in recent times is the importance of detachment. To me, it's one of the most essential things at this time, because detachment protects me to continue to be loving and have goodwill for others. If I'm not detached, I absorb, I'm affected, I can't love. If I'm detached accurately, then I can keep loving, I can keep giving respect, I can keep having good wishes, then I will keep changing, I will keep becoming pure. But if I keep falling back, reacting, feeling hurt, I'm stuck, just stuck in that place, and I don't really feel, you know, that real spiritual progress. And I think that, you know, what is detachment? To me, it's to be loving, caring, close, real deep communication, but uninfluenced by. And if you observe the daddies are so close, and yet they're detached at the same time. We often completely misinterpret this virtue because there's different types of detachment. You know, sometimes, excuse me, I think there's the sannyas style of detachment, which is, you know, where I, in the name of detachment, I'm irresponsible. I just leave my responsibility. There's the don't care style of detachment, you know. I don't care, do whatever you want, who cares, you know. That's not detachment at all. There's the escapist style of detachment. I can't cope with things, so I just withdraw. Sometimes even Baba's children, we sort of withdraw from social situations and family situations because I find them challenging. Because when I'm around people, my sanskaras erupt. And it's hard, so I withdraw. I like my own company because it's easier and my sanskaras aren't triggered so much. Baba wants us to be in the heart of the gathering, but uninfluenced. And to me, this is such an incredible education to learn to be completely and utterly uninfluenced while living in this physical world. And then I have the capacity to be absolutely loving. Who is the most loving? Baba. Who is the most detached? Baba. So the capacity to love depends on how I build my capacity of detachment. And if you look at people who are constantly loving, they're always usually very detached as well, in Baba's way. Not that detachment often has a bad name in the Brahman family, because it often comes over as looking aloof, disconnected, you know, withdrawn, unfriendly. That's not Baba's style at all. Baba's style is to be completely close, connected, loving, but uninfluenced by. I think it's so important. And the third thing in the confluence age is to be an instrument for unlimited service. And I think Baba, once Daddy gave us a definition of service which I really love, and that was that action that brings me and others closer to Baba. I think that's a very good definition. And if you look at your service life, and just have that little phrase, is this bringing me closer to Baba? Is it bringing others closer to Baba? If not, then maybe I need to look really whether this is really worthwhile doing or not. Because I remember once Baba saying that he will be glorified when one of each background says my Baba. And I think that all of us, we come from such a variety of backgrounds, cultures, religions, and it's wonderful. To me, it's just so, the more variety, the better, because when we all say from our heart, my Baba, that's when Baba will be revealed. And I think that probably the main thing of this confluence period is to ask my heart, how deeply have I recognized Baba? Because I'm here. And maybe there's a little bit of time for some questions. We have a microphone if someone would like to ask something. But I think it's always an interesting question just to think, you know, we're here because I've recognized Baba, but have I deeply recognized Baba? And even Baba himself sometimes says in the Gita, or quotes the Gita, out of millions, only a few recognize me, but out of those few, only a handful understand me as I truly am. I don't know, do you ever think about that? I often think, well, have I really understood Baba as he really is? You know, have I removed all the veils of bhakti interpretation of God? Have I really got clarity? Because the confluence age ultimately is the time to know God intimately, the only time in eternity. And that's why sometimes I can see myself go to sleep a little bit, even if I'm busy in service. Sometimes the thought comes, you know, is this awareness of really who is teaching and what is happening top of mind? Or does the busyness of life, the complications of relationships and things dominate my thinking? Or do I keep that real focus? And I think one of the reasons I admire Daddy Jenky so much is that it's like she just constantly keeps that elevated awareness of who she is and who she belongs to. And I think that is really the way to enjoy the wonder of this time, the wonder of the confluence age. So I think we have a little bit of time before lunch. So if anyone would like to make a comment or ask a question, you're most welcome. If no one has anything, we can have a little bit more meditation, but there's a microphone at the front of the stage here if anyone would like to ask something. It'd be nice if you can just say your name and your country. And is it on the microphone?
Okay. My name is Stevan. I'm from Montenegro. There are no Brahmins in Montenegro.
Are you the only Brahmin?
I'm first timer here.
I think we should give him a round of applause, don't you?
And the thing that I'm thinking about for the last few days is what is the practical way, because as I started doing this in my country, this detached by loving, but loving way makes a lot of confusion. So what can be the practical way of putting this in practice?
You know, I think there's some things which we keep having to experiment with to find what it really is. Sometimes we're too loving and sometimes we're too detached. To be really accurately detached and loving, I think everyone enjoys. I really do. And the thing is, if we're dealing with family members, or people who have known us, I think everyone in this room, you know, when you make that change, people have known you a certain way and then suddenly overnight you're different. It's hard for people around to, you know, understand what is actually happening to you. And sometimes when we're very new, we're a bit extreme and we take Baba's words a little bit literally, and so we're too rigid in expressing, you know, suddenly, well, I shouldn't, you know, think of any human being or, you know. So it's all a little bit rigid. But I think after a while we learn how to be really sensible and manage situations, because really we should be absolutely loving. I think once Daddy Jenky said, the ultimate result of this knowledge is to be absolutely loving. And I remember five or six years ago, Baba asked all of those who are over 30 years in knowledge to stand up. And when he stood up, all those in foreign countries, and Baba said, set the date for perfection. Do you remember when Baba said that? Set the date for perfection. And in my mind I was thinking, well, what exactly is perfection? What does perfection look like? In reality, in real terms. And then the next morning, Baba said, perfection is to be loving to all. And I thought that was such an incredible, it just made a lot of sense to me, really, to be loving to every type of soul with every type of sanskar. God does that. God's eternally perfect. And in a sense, that's the model for me. And so it's like, I think we should give extra love to our family and this sort of thing, but learn how not to absorb. And I have this little catchphrase, and I share this a lot. Am I absorbing or observing? A jnani soul will observe situations without a lot of knowledge. I keep absorbing. So I absorb all the stuff which triggers all the thinking and feeling. It's just practice. You know, to be around people with different opinions and different ideas and very body conscious, you know, initially sometimes we're quite critical. As soon as I understand what soul consciousness is and purity, I can be quite negative. That doesn't do service, you know. We start to become judgmental about their behavior. But actually, I think we should be more loving. To people who don't have knowledge, you know, we should be really merciful and loving. Of course it takes spiritual strength. It takes spiritual strength. All detachment is not being influenced. That's all it is. Being in the world but not of the world. And Baba uses the image of the lotus. You're in the mud but you're beyond the influence. It takes practice. I remember when I was in London, I had a job in the heart of London. You know, I was just very young in those days. I was just working. I was like a student and I was working. I was just early with Baba. And I was working in a vegetarian restaurant, which is just near Inner Space, only 10 or 15 meters from where Baba's place is. And one day, it was the middle of winter and a lot of people were sick and they're away and we had a lot of customers coming in. And I can remember one man was really angry because he, you know, his food wasn't ready. It was taking a long time. He was at the end of the queue and the closer he came, I could feel his anger. I could even feel it in me. And when he came to the counter, you know, he was really quite angry and I could feel it in my stomach and I realized how vulnerable I was, you know. I had no wisdom to protect myself. I can't blame him. It was me, my lack of ability. And that's where when knowledge is deep in the soul and yoga power, I'm in those situations, I'm not absorbing them. But this is the long-term practice of a yogi, to be in the thick of anything and keep calm, keep relaxed, and remain uninfluenced and stable. It's experience, which is one of the main things. But to me, I feel if we are Baba, if we're the children of the ocean of love, we should be so loving, so caring, and deeply respectful of others, even if they completely disagree with me. And if someone says to me, you know, I don't agree with any of the things you say, I say, well, you have every right. That's fine. Why should I worry about it? Some people won't agree with what I do, and especially some family members, because body conscious love means that they want you to be what they want you to be. If you change, they don't think, oh, is it great? He's changed. He wants to change. It's because it's all about, you know, you being there for me. And when you change, it's a threat. It's a threat. Change is a big threat to body conscious people. And so they will say, oh, we liked you when you were like this before. All of us have to go through these things. And we have to be patient, but keep loving and keep giving respect. You know, once I think one of the brothers said, what's the culture that Baba creates? It's a respectocracy. You know how they have democracies and theocracies. Baba's way, Baba's system is a respectocracy. The way it works is to keep giving respect to everyone. And what happens when we give respect? We get it. Yeah. I remember once when we celebrated 50 years of the Yajna, the Golden Jubilee, one of the original sisters sat in front of Baba. And Baba said to her, he gave her drishti, and Baba said, "You want love, don't you?" She said, "Yes." And she said, "You want," and then he said, "You want respect, don't you?" And she said, "Yes." And Baba said, "Give it. Just give it and you'll receive it." You know, it's the fundamental law of karma. You know, sometimes we wait for people to love me, respect me, support me, cooperate. If I want it, give it. And if I'm not receiving it, don't look at them. Look at maybe I need to give more. Because the law of life is true. You will ultimately receive what you give. So is there any other questions? And if you don't mind just mentioning which country you're from and your name, thank you.
My name is Rani. I'm from Malaysia. I'm a first timer in Madhuban. Okay, I am visually handicapped. Okay, since just now you chose sensitive because of ego, but sometimes when some people tells me something, I'm very fast over it because I'm quite sensitive. But sometimes certain things because of my visually affects me from can't do certain things. So I don't know how to overcome that. Thank you.
Thank you, Rani. I think Rani needs a clap too. She's come all the way here. She's come all the way here visually handicapped, and that's not a small thing, so that's wonderful. You know, that's why I asked, you know, who's sensitive here? Only a few put up their hands. I think everyone's sensitive. It's a part of being body conscious, but it is ego, actually. And sometimes I think, you know, some people, you know, we hope that someone won't say something rude or someone won't make comments about me. Where can I go if I think like that? We will all get comments. Things are going to happen. You know, from what I understand, Brahma Baba used to say to children who were oversensitive, he used to sometimes call them, you know, Baba was very strong. He said, "You're a baby intellect. Grow up," you know, like, because I think sometimes we're so delicate and we think, well, it's okay to be delicate. You should understand I'm sensitive, so don't do anything that's going to upset me. Life's not like that. And I think a lot of this journey to soul consciousness is becoming strong, tough. We have to be a bit spiritually tough because it's a difficult world out there. And we've got to, my ego keeps taking sorrow and hurt. We feel upset by small things. And I think, you know, maturity spiritually is just getting over all those little sort of things that disturb and upset, because, you know, otherwise I just fluctuate constantly. And that's another reason why I think it's so good to live in the heart of this family, because I think we learn to be stable in amongst things around me which are changing, and all the variety of personalities and situations, just to not absorb it once again. And I have a little catchphrase for myself. I think of it all the time. Only my ego accepts sorrow. If something hurts me, upsets me, gives me sorrow, no, my ego is ruling me at that time. I'm under the influence of the wrong self. If I am soul conscious, I will not accept the sorrow. Of course, we're all in this process of change. Of course, it takes time, and I have to be patient. But I also got to be honest with myself that if I'm oversensitive, it's me. And I've got to be patient, and I just keep saying, well, let me let go of this and just keep having that aim to become, you know, really stable and strong and not letting little things rock my boat. Thank you, Sister Rani. I don't know if that's what the answer you wanted. Please come.
Yeah, you mentioned about, actually I don't know whether
you
are
mentioned your name and where you're from.
Yeah, my name is Amar and I'm from Canada, Vancouver City. I don't know whether you have already answered that, but there's something you said would just open up something for me, so I just want to share a little bit of that. You mentioned that how do I know whether I'm making progress towards being more spiritual, and this has been actually my inquiry as well. And whenever I was in the setting where I found myself to be more impatient, or when I was in the setting when I observed somebody being more impatient or abrupt, then I would become a little bit uneasy. That there's something which is not right. And today I got the answer that, you know, probably my soul is telling me that this is not spiritual behavior. So, whether it is in the setting of Brahma Kumari or in the other any other setting, you just feel that this is not something right. This is not being spiritual or this is not being loveful. So, that's what I said.
Thank you, Amma. I think that's very true, because you know how sometimes someone does something, like he said, you get impatient or a bit upset, or you get angry. You may not show it, but inside you feel a bit angry. You know the effect, I think, deep down at the core of your being, you feel disappointed in yourself. You know that thing? You know you can be better, and especially we Brahmins, Baba sets such a high standard. And that's why I think the more we do actions according to my truth, the more we follow really Baba's directions, Baba's Srimat, we feel better about who we are. And you know, in the 1980s, one Australian brother sat in front of Baba, and Baba gave him drishti, and Baba said, you have a question, don't you? And he said, yes. And Baba said, okay, I'm happy to hear it. And he said, Baba, how do I get my self-respect back? And you know Baba's answer? Three words. Just follow Srimat. And actually, that's a profoundly deep thing. It's like when you follow true action, you do right action, you can like who you are. If you do action against your truth, you don't feel comfortable about who you are. And I loved it, because if you go to those online, you know, bookshops, and there's millions of books, how to have self-esteem, how to have self-respect. Someone asked God and he said, just follow Srimad. And that's a whole nother story, understanding the value of Srimat and really what it is and how following Srimat is a part of the healing of the soul very much. So yes, I agree that when you do something against your truth, deep down it affects my self-respect, we feel disappointed. And that's why the more I live according to what Baba tells me and what I believe to be true, the better I feel about myself. Unless there's another question, we can... maybe one more question and we can...
Yo hablo en español. ¿Alguien tiene para poderme traducir, por favor? Om Shanti. At first, Brother, thanks very much for your
through experience, personal experience, it's a courage to give us who, like a mirror, what efforts you have done. So, at first, thanks very much. Second, I have, when I listen to you, I feel me when you give your experience. And I remember one thing. I have to become, to be only who I am. It's for me my aim effort. And you're right, when we become Brahmin, we become more sensitive.
More what?
Sensitive.
Sensitive.
Huh? And before I was Brahmin, I was very sensitive because when somebody comes to speak with me, he has a problem. I cry with them. Before Brahmin, so you can feel who I am. And at first, I thanks again because when I listen to you, I just discover another sense of ocean of poison. Because Baba says always take bath in ocean of knowledge. And when you say us, don't listen over, don't take. So you have to see, to hear, but not see, not hear. Because I understand now what is the ocean of poison. It's not only vices, but everybody, everything, every vibration. So we have to protect ourselves and to make the effort to be on our self-respect. I am a soul. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, Shanti. Soy de España y me llamo Reyes. En primer lugar, doy las gracias a Baba por este instrumento. Yo, mi trabajo ahora es el desapego. Bueno, entonces, hoy me has dado, o sea, han pasado, la familia es maravillosa porque es la que te ayuda a superarte y a estar.
Maybe you have to get him to translate just each sentence. Carlos.
So, sister was saying, thank you. And about detachment. So she says thank you because she's working on detachment. And sí, todavía. And just today with your lecture, I received some answers about some items that I'm working on with the family. As Baba says,
Baba dice que mucho lo conocemos, o sea, que muy poco lo conocemos, pero muy poco lo llegamos a conocer. Yo, mi trabajo, me gustaría llegar a ese conocimiento que Baba dice, siempre que hemos tenido retiro.
So as Baba says, just a few really know me, and I would love to get to the point to really know him.
Mi falta de autorrespeto, he pensado siempre que no tenía un intelecto para saber discernir. Los instrumentos decían que sí, pero yo pensaba que no.
So my lack of self-respect was not to realize that I had the intellect to know all this, but even though the instruments were saying that I really have this intellect.
Baba, como es tan misericordioso con nosotros, en la murri te dice, no tenga pensamiento despreciable. Y entonces otra cosa de la que mi trabajo es el no tener pensamientos desperdiciables. Y es verdad que el intelecto se te abre y vas captando más los mensajes de Baba.
So I think the work is on the about waste thoughts. And,
pero también es verdad.
Just essence full of that's okay. Mm.
También es verdad que no sé qué decir. Me ha ido, bueno. que no me acuerdo lo que iba a decir. Se me ha ido.
I can't remember what I was going.
Bueno, que Baba dice, o sea, para tú tener un buen yoga necesitas conocimiento. Entonces yo quisiera tener tanto conocimiento y tiempo para tener ese conocimiento para llegar a esa profundidad de Baba. Yo quiero conocer a Baba, experimentar a Baba en su esencia, porque tiene cosas muy bonitas.
I have to understand how I can make much more time to understand what really Baba is saying, because I would love to get to the point to know Baba better.
Yes. I think that's the aim of all of us, and really the best way is through the Muli. The Muli really reveals Baba's personality. Thank you.
Gracias. Okay, gracias. Thank you.
One last question maybe, yes, if you want to, this gentleman, yeah. Carlos, you can stand up, it's okay.
Mi nombre es Alberto, vengo de España, y mi pregunta es, ¿cuál es la diferencia entre ser sutil y ser delicado? Porque a veces tenemos miedo de decir las cosas, o las decimos con mucho tacto, pero no las decimos correctamente, por miedos a diferentes cosas, o manipulamos.
So the question is, how can I to be subtle and not delicate, because sometimes we cannot get to the point to express what we really want to express, and we don't get subtle but delicate.
Sorry, I didn't quite understand. Sorry.
¿Cuál es la diferencia?
Carlos, sorry, I didn't quite grasp.
Delicado y sutil.
The difference between delicate, to be delicate or sensitive, and subtle.
Oh, the difference between subtle, delicate, and sensitive.
Subtle. Yeah, actually he said sensitive and subtle.
Oh, okay, yeah. You see, there can be maybe a positive sensitivity, meaning that you're sensitive to others' behavior. You know how some people are very tuned in, and in another way of describing that, in modern language, is emotional intelligence. When you have emotional intelligence, you tune into people. You can understand what they need, when they need it. You can read them by their face and their vibrations. So that's a positive sense of sensitivity. The one we've been talking about is more the negative style, where little things, little comments, little actions, little expressions of faith change my mood, and that's a sort of negative. And I just say, you know, yeah, it's probably that's the easiest way of describing it, that subtle, you know, things are subtle in Brahman life. And I think, you know, even Baba sometimes says, for the world you teach knowledge, but in the Brahman family you teach through your attitude. Everything is subtle. And you know, often we feel people can't know what's in my thinking. I disagree, actually. They won't know your actual thoughts, but we pick up the feelings so subtly. You know, the feelings in people's minds. And that's where the more I keep my mind clean, pure, elevated, with goodwill, positive, people get, they feel comfortable around me. You know how sometimes you're with some people, you feel so comfortable with them, you feel easy, because their thoughts are clean and accepting. But some people, you sort of feel a bit more tense, because perhaps their mind is more judgmental. Now, we should not really be influenced by any of those, but everything in Brahman life, I think, is quite subtle. But there is a positive form of sensitivity, which is when I'm tuned in, I'm sensitive to situations, but there's a negative form where things really affect me. So anyway, I think I'll finish here because it's lunchtime. So thank you so much, and we'll finish with maybe a song and some meditation. Thank you, everyone. Om Shanti.